The following program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Lina Mudu, and welcome to Health Chat. The World Health Organization says people should be more aware of the dangers of smoking. Tobacco use has been linked to chronic diseases such as strokes, cancers, and asthma. Along with other chronic diseases, together they account for 60% of all deaths worldwide. They are expected to account for 46% of deaths in Africa by the year 2030, up from 25% in 2004. On today's program, we will discuss the dangers of tobacco use and how to address the issue. And joining us via phone from Accra, Ghana, is Joshua Kialo, a director of Africa Programs of the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, an organization based here in Washington, D.C. Mr. Kialo, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Renat.
It's good to have you with us. Also joining us via phone from Cape Town, South Africa, is Dr. Evan Bletcher, Director for the International Tobacco Control Research with the American Cancer Society. Dr. Bletcher, welcome to the show. Dr. Bletcher, are you there?
Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you for joining us. And let me remind the listeners, if you would like to participate in the show with your questions or comments, feel free to call us at 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1, and you can ask your international operator to reverse the charges. You can also email us your thoughts at healthchat@voanews.com. And as usual, you can post them on facebook.com/VOA Health Chat. And we will discuss the dangers of tobacco use in a moment, but first, VOA's Lisa Schlein has this report.
Tobacco use is the world's leading preventable cause of death. The World Health Organization reports tobacco kills nearly 8 million people a year. This includes more than 600,000 non-smokers who are dying from breathing in other people's smoke. WHO warns tobacco will cause the deaths of about 1 billion people by the end of this century if no action is taken. It says 80% of these deaths will occur in low- and middle-income countries. The UN Health Agency says most of these premature deaths can be prevented through measures that discourage people from taking up smoking and encourage them to stop. It says the most effective way of doing this is by imposing high taxes on a pack of cigarettes and other tobacco products. Coordinator of WHO's Tobacco Control Economics Unit, Ida Ureke, says evidence shows that raising taxes not only saves lives, but generates significant revenue for governments.
So these are the win-win policies for public health and the economy. According to WHO, a global 50% increase in taxes on cigarettes would lead to 49 million fewer smokers and save 11 million lives. One of WHO's highest priorities in tobacco control is to prevent young people from starting to use tobacco. And such tax increases can prevent 11 million young people from becoming smokers.
The World Health Organization calculates governments around the world would earn an extra $101 billion in revenue if all countries increased tobacco taxes by 50% per pack. While tax hikes may be good for the public and governments, it is bad news for the tobacco industry. Program Manager for the Prevention of Non-Communicable Diseases at WHO, Armando Poruga, tells VOA, the industry is worried that increased taxes will result in lost sales.
In order to avoid that, they use different tactics, such as, for example, try to press on the government the false idea that the tobacco industry will have to leave the country with the loss of revenue for the country, and they will say that they will lose employment, and also they will use some tactics that are not so legal in trying to convince parliamentarians to vote against the increase of taxes.
The World Health Organization cites tax increases as the most effective among a number of tobacco control measures. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Mr. Chalo, let me start with you and ask your reaction on the report we heard. One of the things that transpired in this report is that one of the experts said clearly that one of the goals was to prevent young people from smoking, which is partly the focus of your work. Tell us why it is so important to target the youth.
Thank you, Lenore. I think the report is accurate in many respects. First and foremost, as you have said in your introduction, the tobacco industry sells a highly addictive product that has been scientifically proven to cause death, disease, and disability. And it's a record. Tobacco is the only legal product that, when used as recommended by the manufacturer, kills more than 50% of its lifetime users. And what the tobacco industry is trying to do is to find a lifeline of supply for their profits. Therefore,
you have no call credit in your MTN account. Please.
Okay, hello. I think we lost Mr. Chalo. We will try to get him later. And let me come to you, Dr. Blecher. One of the things that Mr. Chalo mentioned is the fact that tobacco is highly addictive, and it was also mentioned in the package. What in smoking cigarette is addictive? What causes harm, actually, in smoking cigarette? Let me start with that. What causes harm? Is it the smoke? Is it the nicotine? What is it exactly?
I think that's a really interesting question, and it's not that straightforward an answer. The addictiveness of a cigarette is driven almost exclusively by nicotine. Nicotine is a stimulant, and it is a stimulant that is naturally occurring within the tobacco plant. And that is what causes the addiction directly. The nicotine itself isn't the significant cause of harm. It's not to say that nicotine is harmless, not at all. But the significant harm that's caused by cigarette smoking is from the smoke, the carbon monoxide in the smoke, but also from a large number, thousands of carcinogens and toxins that are found in it that then cause other diseases, mostly cancers, but also anything from heart disease to stroke to a number of other COPD diseases like emphysema, for instance. So the nicotine itself is not the concern from a health perspective, but that is what drives the addiction.
Okay, that's interesting. So let's say, for example, it is possible to make cigarettes without nicotine, and I'm being idealistic, maybe not, I don't know. Then will it be okay then to smoke?
Certainly not. I think if you had cigarettes with no nicotine, it probably would not be as addictive as it is. In actual fact, it might not be addictive at all. That would make it significantly easier for people to quit smoking than is currently the case. I think the concern with the addiction is that it makes it very difficult for people to stop smoking, which means when people start smoking as adolescents, as youth, it can, in many cases, become a lifetime condition. So making it without nicotine doesn't reduce the harm at all. In actual fact, I think historically, tobacco industries have tried to reduce the nicotine content in tobacco and try and sell it as a healthy alternative. And the science and experience has shown that that's not the case, because people still remain users of a very, very dangerous product.
Okay. And Mr. Chalo, you are back. We are glad you are back. You were making a point about the youth and smoking, and I wanted you to expand a little more on it. Why is it important to focus on the youth?
So basically, thank you, Lina, so I dropped off the line. The tobacco industry, as Singer Evan must have mentioned, has a very sophisticated marketing strategy. And they try to make smoking look very cool. They try to make it look very trendy. They are targeting the youth. And the reason why, if they can initiate young people into smoking, say at the ages of 14 or even around the teenage age, will that they have a lifelong supply of profit margins. And that's important to the tobacco industry. So what's happening on the continent is you have very aggressive advertising, sponsorship approaches that the industry is trying to use, targeting young people. Mm-hmm. And it's therefore extremely important that government put in place very strict regulations that are fully compliant with the Federal Convention on Tobacco Control to prevent young people from initiating smoking, to help set young people that are already involved in smoking to quit and to reduce tobacco consumption. So basically, the more people you have smoking, the higher the profit margin for the tobacco industry. And that's why they undermined every effort by every government across the world, and particularly in Africa, to put in place regulations and laws that are compliant with the Federal Convention on Tobacco Control.
Okay. And, Doctor, I would like to find out, Dr. Blecher, are there any evidence-based research that shows the effect of tobacco use on youth as opposed to adults? Let's say in a given number of years, same years, let's say a 15-year-old uses tobacco for 10 years and someone who's 45 uses tobacco for 10 years. What type of consequences? Do you think there will be some similarities in types of the health impact?
Yeah, that's actually quite an interesting question. The health impact of tobacco use, of smoking, is both a short-term and a long-term impact. The short-term impact, particularly with heart disease, with issues, health issues like stroke and heart attack, that's pretty immediate. So when you start smoking, you're going to see those risks occur immediately. And when you quit smoking, you see those risks subside quite quickly as well. But that's one range of the health consequences. There's an entire long-term range of health consequences from tobacco use or smoking as well, which is mainly around cancers and diseases like emphysema, where long-term usage increases the risk of those diseases. So maybe with children, we'll find a different disease profile linked to tobacco use. You know, obviously, the heart disease is one of them. But for instance, you're going to find it aggravates a number of issues, including asthma. And it, from a perspective of children, I think there's two separate ways of looking at it. One is that when kids start smoking, they become addicted to it, and that means that they become smokers for their entire lifetime. Mm-hmm. So the best time to prevent people from smoking is when they start, obviously. And the majority of smokers will start when they're young, when they're kids. People in their 20s, 30s are not going to start smoking. Joshua and I were on a program last week where two smokers told us of their experiences of starting smoking as an 11-year-old. Hmm. And we certainly know that when people are 11, they're not going to be able to make informed decisions, understanding the costs, understanding the consequences of those decisions. But they remained, or one of those two gentlemen, has remained a smoker until now and is currently in his 70s. So, you know, he's remained addicted for that 60-year period. And that's why we want to avoid children starting smoking in the first place.
That's incredible.
Because at that time, they're not necessarily going to see the consequences of their tobacco use in terms of disease.
Yes.
But that consequence is going to come back in middle age. That's when the majority of smokers are going to see the health consequences start coming towards them in their 30s, in their 40s.
We have a question from John Tejo in Cameroon. He says, what are the health risks of smoking pipes or cigars? Dr. Blecher, did you want to...
Smoking tobacco is in itself an inherently dangerous thing to do. Whether you smoke cigars, whether you smoke pipes, whether you smoke cigarettes, they're all dangerous. Some products are probably less dangerous than others for certain diseases, but they might be more dangerous for other diseases. But that said, I think the medical evidence is quite clear that manufactured cigarettes are significantly the most harmful products to smoke.
Okay. And I have Katrina in Kenya. She says, How do you help a young man or woman stop smoking? Joshua, in your campaign, what do you do? What are some of the approaches that you use?
There are several things. First and foremost, I think Kenya is a very good example, you know, to talk about, because Kenya does have a fairly strong tobacco control, national tobacco control law in place that was enacted in 2007. And within that law, there are very clear provisions. For example, warning people on the deadly consequences of tobacco use in all forms, as Evan said. We need to make the point in this program, we know that tobacco kills, causes disability and disease, and there's no safe form or amount of tobacco use. Mm-hmm. So back to the question in Cameroon, but to talk about the Kenyan situation, so there are several strategies that are used. Of course, you want to prevent smoke use, but for those that are already smoking, the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control does have a program, provisional policy provision for cessation. And I'm aware that several governments around the world, and increasingly in Africa as well, is putting in place measures and systems for helping people quit smoking. But at the same time, there are other provisions that prevent people from exposure to secondhand smoke, and that is equally important. The rule of the thumb from policy perspective, and that's what we try to emphasize, as we know, we talk about the health consequences of tobacco use, the rule of the thumb for us is to prevent initiation of tobacco consumption. That's really what is most important, to prevent exposure to secondhand smoke, which also kills people equally. Mm-hmm. And the more we have national laws put in place by African governments that are in line with the Framework Convention of Tobacco Control, the better. And I just want to say, and this is a reference point, the eminent scientists in Africa, Leonard, have just spoken. They have produced a report called Preventing a Tobacco Epidemic in Africa, a call for effective action to support health, mm-hmm. social, and economic development. That, I'm sure you'll be circulating that through the social media system of the Voice of America, because all our listeners need to be fully informed and aware of it. That's what governments are trying to do as well, and trying to make sure that every cigarette packet has a large, broad graphic and text warnings to just warn people of the consequences of tobacco use.
That's very interesting, and I saw this report, very, very compelling, interesting report. Let's talk about WHO's move to encourage tax increase on cigarettes as a way to decrease the number of smokers. First of all, what is your take on that, on this measure? Does it really work? Do you think it's going to work? Because for me, when I think about it, it's okay, maybe it will deter some people from buying. Let's say the youth. Some youth may not have that much money to buy it. What about if they do have the money then? Aren't they encouraging or maybe enriching these tobacco companies that you are trying to, I don't know how this policy really works or can work. Joshua, I'll have your reaction, Dr. Bletcher, after Joshua Chalo. And go ahead, Joshua Chalo, your reaction to this?
Okay, yeah, I will start, and I'm sure that I will have, first and foremost, from all the work we've done around the world, tobacco taxation is the most effective method for reducing tobacco consumption. And when you increase, as you said, prices of cigarettes or tobacco products through tax increases, there are three what I call win-win situations for any government in any situation. Number one, mm-hmm. you, going back to your question, you encourage those that are smoking to quit smoking. You reduce our consumption among tobacco users. Back to the question from Kenya. You also prevent initiation among potential users, especially the young people. And you overall reduce the quantity of tobacco that is consumed among continuing users. And therefore, it is the most effective policy provision that we campaign for. We think that it is particularly useful and effective in reducing smoking among what we consider to be the most vulnerable populations, such as the youth, pregnant women, and low-income smokers. And therefore, when you increase the price of tobacco through tax increases, you will be able to decrease tobacco consumption, you'll be able to save lives, and you'll be able to raise tax revenue for the government. It works, and I'm sure Evan has can weigh in on that as well.
Dr. Bletcher?
Yeah, I think I'm incredibly encouraged that the World Health Organization decided to use tax policy as the theme for this year's World No Tobacco Day. And it's incredibly important as a tool in Africa for two reasons. Number one is that the reason why tobacco use is growing in Africa, is primarily because of economic development. For many years, I think the narrative about Africa economically was that we were underperforming. But in the last decade, we haven't. We've been performing better than we have historically and better than much of the developed world in terms of our economic growth. Mm-hmm. And as economies grow, incomes rise. And as incomes rise, we consume more of everything. And that's probably a good thing for something like toothpaste. But for something like tobacco, that's not a good thing. And so the specific tool that governments have in order to target not to target the increasing income, but to deal with this unintended consequence, is to make tobacco products less affordable. And the way we make tobacco products less affordable is to raise the prices, and the way we do that is to raise taxes. And I can give an example of many African countries that have been pursuing tax increases in recent times.
South Africa has done that, right? Yeah, South Africa has done that, right?
Well, not only South Africa. We've seen recently tax increases in Senegal, in Gambia, in Togo. We've seen a reform of the tax system in Kenya, an increase of taxes in Uganda. But South Africa is obviously the most commonly spoken about example. In the early 1990s, South Africa started to raise taxes on tobacco quite aggressively. And since then, we've raised taxes on tobacco by over 500%.
Okay.
And that's an extraordinary number. But at the same time, what we've seen is the aggregate market for tobacco products sold in South Africa declined by 40%.
Mm-hmm.
But the real way we can look at that metric is in the early 1990s, in 1993, 33% of South African adults smoked. It was past tense. In the current scenarios, only 20% of South African adults smoke.
Interesting.
So that's a 13 percentage point decline or a 30% odd decline. But when we translate that into actual people, we say that there's 4 million fewer smokers now than there were in mm-hmm. South Africa, or that there would have been in the absence of these measures. And that's an extraordinary number. I mean, we're looking at potentially 1.5 to 2 million deaths averted as a result of tobacco control policies. And the cornerstone of that policy has been tax. And this is the other side where Joshua mentioned the win-win scenario. In current terms, we now collect about 10 billion rand a year from tobacco taxation. That's about $1 billion a year. 20 years ago, we were collecting 2 billion rand a year, mm-hmm. $200 million. So that, I mean, that's a fivefold increase in annual tax collections as well. And that's important in terms of funding health systems, in terms of funding education. And these are critical necessities in Africa now,
okay.
where the reliance on development assistance that was previously occurring is not taking place anymore.
Let's talk about other possible measures that could take place or are also taking place in this regard to tackle this issue. Joshua, when you look at what is being done in some of the African countries where you work, where you've traveled, in terms of measures, besides the tax increase that obviously both of you gentlemen think it's a very good idea, what other measure do you think will work or is working that could be replicated in other countries?
Great question, Lenore. First and foremost, I think the biggest measure, Lenore, is that African governments and should increasingly put in place full national control laws that are compliant with it. Framework Convention on Tobacco Control of the World Health Organization, number one. Within that, there are very specific policy measures that we know work. We talked about tobacco taxation. The second area of the policy revision that we think is critical and a priority is total ban on tobacco advertising, promotion, and sponsorship. That is Article 13 of the FTC. We also want governments to put in place policies that create 100% smoke-free work and public have places and spaces to protect the general public against the deadly consequences of tobacco use, both as primary smokers, but also as exposure to secondhand smoke. The other area that we think is very important is putting in place prominent health warnings on tobacco packages. I don't know what else there is that you have to learn.
We're having a little bit of technical problem, Joshua, with your line. Let me go to Dr. Bletcher while my producer figure out what's going on so we can let you finish your thought. Dr. Bletcher, we have a question here from Aristide, and he says, I've been a smoker for the past 30 years. I'm now 45. What benefit will I have if I stop smoking? Has the damage been done already?
I would say not entirely. You know, being a smoker for 30 years, it means that the risk of particularly of cancers is always going to be higher. But that said, the risk of heart disease, the risk of stroke, the risk of other diseases as well is going to decline rapidly. A person who's been smoking for 30 years, if they stop smoking, they're going to feel immediate benefits. And some of these benefits in terms of one that is most noticeable is when doing exercise. I think when smokers quit smoking, they report immediately an improved performance with exercise. So not all damage is done. I think the earlier a person is able to quit, obviously the less permanent damage gets done, particularly in terms of cancer risk. But quitting at any time improves one's prognosis. The idea of saying, oh, I've been smoking for so long, there's no point in quitting now, is actually just not true. The ability to reduce risk of diseases, particularly heart disease, is quite significant to any quitter. And obviously reducing risk of cancers is an important benefit to quitting even earlier.
And Joshua, I hear you back. I have a question. I wanted to let you finish your thought very quickly, but also Habib is asking a question. When it comes to addressing smoking among youth, what should be the emphasis? Preventing new smokers or helping those who smoke to quit? And that's in 30 seconds because we're getting ready to close. Joshua, are you there? Joshua Kialo, are you there? Okay. And Dr. Pletcher, let me toss you that question very quickly.
Sure. I mean, I think this is slightly more controversial because there's those in public health that say we should help everyone. We should both prevent youth from starting and we should help people to quit when they are already smokers. My personal perception of that is maybe a little different, and I believe prevention is always better than cure. Obviously, if we can prevent people from starting to smoke in the first place, they're never going to suffer from any diseases as a result of it. And it's also significantly cheaper for us to prevent rather than deal with. But if we have the resources available, and I believe that, you know, most countries have the resources available to pursue tobacco control policies because they're what we call population-level policies. We implement them at a national level, at a population level, and it doesn't require necessarily spending money on individual people because we know things like tax increases, advertising bans are going to encourage people to quit. So we can do both of them simultaneously, but my preference is always for prevention rather than cure.
Absolutely. Prevention is better than cure, and that is so true in so many other diseases. Dr. Evan Bletcher, thank you so much for joining us.
And thank you for having me.
Thank you to Joshua Kialo, whom we lost, unfortunately, due to some technical difficulties. He joined us from Ghana, and we'd like to thank both of the gentlemen for being with us today to discuss the issue of tobacco. A reminder that you can join our, you cannot join our conversation anymore. This is the end of the program. And if you want to continue the conversation, however, you can join us on facebook.com/VOA Health Chat and send us more questions and your reaction to this program. I'm your host, Lino Mudo in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.